take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Slow Pitch, a podcast that takes sports movies too seriously, or perhaps not seriously enough. We're your hosts,
freaking Sean Williams
and Brad Etherly, two guys who consider watching sports movies a type of aerobic exercise. Today's episode is a review of the 1994 classic, The Air Up There. And this is not to be confused with the George Clooney, Anna Kendrick vehicle Up in the Air.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie is 10 times better than that movie was.
So Starsky decided to direct a movie, and this is what we got.
Yeah. Well, and it was amazing. Apparently, Starsky loves the use of slow-mo to show sports action sequences.
The slow motion is amazing in this movie.
Well, it's the way, like, basically by using so much slow-mo, that was like him telling me, okay, I did not cast any actual athletes in this movie, so I'm going to hide it by doing everything in slow-mo. And that is including this top recruit from, what was the name of the village that the kid was from?
Wanabe?
Wanabe, that's right. Including this Wanabe kid is pretty amazing.
To get back to Starsky, he's only directed, his name is John Michael Glazer or something like that? Anyway.
Yeah.
Starsky of Starsky and Hutch.
Do it.
He's only directed like 7 movies, and I've seen an incredible disproportionate number of those. He directed this one, which I hadn't seen until yesterday, and then he's also directed Kazam with Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, another one.
I have seen that. Unfortunately, it's not really a sports movie, even though Shaq's in it, so we probably won't watch it for this podcast. And then there was another movie that he had done that I had seen, blanking on it. But then the last one, I don't know about you, but in high school, I watched this movie like 100 times, it seemed like. Every time I was hanging out with a group of people and there were girls involved, they always wanted to see The Cutting Edge.
Yeah.
And yeah. That was directed by him, and that will be a movie that we will get to at some point.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
So Starsky directed this amazing picture. And the first thing, so you started watching it before I did, and you said the first thing that we need to talk about is
Kevin Bacon's hair.
Yes.
It defies laws of physics more so than any athlete in this movie.
They open up the movie on a back shot of his head. Yeah. And it is like, there are lines and strands of hair that you've never noticed hair could ever do before.
It looks like a fine art sculpture. Like it's the best way to describe it. It looks kind of like if you've seen the movie Can't Buy Me Love, Cindy Mancini's boyfriend, Bobby, who goes to Iowa to play football and he comes back. It's like Charlie Sheen Wall Street in the front, but in the back, it's like this. I wouldn't even call it a mullet. It's more like a mullet curtain. It's like hanging down because it's like it looks like cousin it is sort of like dangling his head off of a ledge and it's just sort of swooping down.
Yes. Yeah. It almost looks like it's made out of, it almost looks like a statue that is made out of copper so that it's like not real hair, but the lines have been etched there, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, this was 1994. This seems like an out of date haircut for that late. Like if I had seen that haircut in 1987, still would have been a bad haircut, but I would have maybe let it go. Cause like this, by 1994, we're getting into Friends territory, and like they all took their hair pretty seriously. We weren't seeing like massive mullets.
Well, and it doesn't move at all until he starts to play basketball against the recruit that he's trying to get to come to college.
Yeah, and his hair gets a little bit more normal when he gets over to Africa.
When he runs out of the LA looks.
Yeah. Yeah. When he runs out of the Dapper Dan, whatever. Yeah. He looks a little bit more normal, but anyway, I don't want to jump ahead too much.
Yeah, so his hair was amazing, and it was the first thing that you see.
Yeah.
And I mean, it literally took me aback. So let me ask you this. Before we even start getting into the workings of this movie, what kind of movie is this? Is this supposed to be a comedy?
Okay. This is, when I was watching this movie, this is what I thought. This is basically Hoosiers and The Karate Kid and Cool Runnings all like mashed into one movie.
Every sports movie, it's obviously a sports movie. Every sports movie is going to be inspirational, you know, to some degree. And so there's that level for this movie. But as far as any other kind of genre, I mean, I think that it was supposed to be comedic, but I did not laugh at a single intentional joke. And I tried to even think, where are the intentional jokes? And I couldn't even think of they were.
Are you telling me it was not hilarious when Kevin Bacon drank that goat's milk and it gave him the runs and he kept having to go out into the woods every 5 minutes? That was hilarious.
So that's the only time I really laughed, is when he farted going running into the woods.
Wait, I didn't even hear that.
Oh, man. You got to watch it again, because there's one.
I need to turn on the closed caption. So,
I had to have a closed caption on.
It says flatulence on there.
But it's after he is arguing with the sister and he keeps holding his crotch instead of his belly.
What kind of sickness? Like, first off, like, goat's milk, does that give you diarrhea? Because lots of people drink goat's milk.
Maybe it wasn't pasteurized, and that's why.
Yeah.
But after he kind of goes back and forth, and it's like, if you've got to go take a crap that bad, like, don't sit there and argue with the sister. Which
one? And just, by the way, when we're saying the sister, this is a woman. This is a woman who plays a nun. Like, people who haven't seen the movie, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But he goes to this African village called Wanabi, where there's this woman there who's part of the mission there with a priest or a bishop or something. And she's a nun, but she's kind of like his love interest. She sort of is like the Barbara Hershey role in Hoosiers, where she doesn't really like the fact that he's coming there to recruit what's his name to play basketball.
Yeah. I don't even know what this kid's name is. I couldn't. But
yeah, they still end up. Oh, well, I don't want to jump ahead anyway.
No, but one of my favorite things is, her character name, as far as I could tell, was just Sister. No last name. The only way you know she's a nun is because she wears a habit in the first scene that she's in.
I know.
She never wears it again.
Yeah. Well, and that was one of the absolutely hilarious jokes that they kept going back to, was she would cuss or something and Kevin Bacon would be like, you're allowed to do that? And like, hold for hysterical laughter.
So I guess it's supposed to be a comedy, even though I honestly couldn't even like remember an actual intentional joke.
Sister Susan is her name.
Okay. I don't remember that her name was Susan, but I'll
IMDb, it is. Yeah.
Let me ask you this too. Do you buy Kevin Bacon as a basketball player?
Not even close. I mean, like, first off, when he was like, the movie opens with Kevin Bacon entertaining a top-notch recruit who's like this cocky kid, looks like Zach Morris. And Kevin Bacon ends up taking him in a one-on-one game.
And he's the recruit is supposed to be 6'8".
They were playing on like 7-foot goals this entire movie, by the way.
Yeah.
In order to beat this top-notch recruit, Kevin Bacon's like in his early 30s or something in this movie, but he's going to show off the patented Kevin, what was his name? Bobby Doyle. Jimmy Dolan, sorry.
Jimmy Dolan.
Yeah, who's Bobby Doyle? I think Major League. That's Bob Uecker in Major League, I think. Jimmy Dolan, he's just going to show off the patented Jimmy Dolan shake and bake, which involves like a running commentary that lasts 30 seconds where he's quizzing
seriously
this guy. He's like, am I going to go left? Am I going to go right? Maybe I'm going to, you don't know what I'm going to do. And it is this like huge buildup to him essentially throwing the ball between the legs of the defender, catching it on the other side and dunking it again, probably on a 6.5 foot goal.
That move is called a nutmeg, by the way.
Oh, it is. Oh, I didn't know that. But it's like he looks like your average non-athletic white guy trying to handle a basketball. He's holding the basketball out in front of this All-American recruit who could easily slap it out of his hands at any time. But the guy's just looking bewildered, like, I don't know what I'm up against here. Like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen, when it's clear that Kevin Bacon has no handles. He was supposed to be like this amazing point guard. And, you know a really good basketball player when you see one, like Allen Iverson dribbling the basketball, or Curly Neal or whoever. Kevin Bacon, he does this like weird thing where when he goes from side to side, his body just moves like an unathletic person. Now, he can probably dance up a storm. We all know that from Footloose, but basketball playing, no.
Not his forte. He is 5'10", and this recruit is supposed to be 6'8".
Well, and in that one-on-one game, he wins the one-on-one game by dunking it. And it was...
He's also got a knee brace from 1952 on.
I was going to say 1920 something. Like, this looks like it's out of a medical journal. Like, if we were to go dig up a medical journal and some artifact, like a time capsule or something, it would have a picture of this knee brace in it.
I'm pretty sure FDR had that same brace for polio.
It looks like, okay.
Is that too soon?
Might be too soon. His knee brace looks like the thing that Forrest Gump broke out of when he started running. That's how lumbersome this thing is.
Yeah, that was an amazing knee brace. And so anyways, he's trying to recruit this kid, but he kind of decides that he doesn't like him. And so he's going to show him how it's done. And the recruit tosses the basketball and says, I'm not playing for you guys. And so he's, the premise is he plays for he is like an assistant coach or something, or a recruiter for a legendary coach who has won like 7 national champions.
Yeah, they gave Foxy some pretty amazing stats.
Yeah.
Because so he had 641 wins. He had been coaching for, I think they said 31 years, and 7 national. That's like John Wooden type numbers.
I mean, yeah. Definitely. It's you're one of the best ever. Yeah,
he's averaging over 20 wins a year, I think, if my math is right.
So they have this big argument because Kevin Bacon got this recruit to run off. And so then they just transfer to like this like appreciation dinner for, I guess, the university or something. They start got like a whole alma mater being sung and everything at the beginning.
Yeah. And what the name of the school is like St. Joseph's or something.
Yeah, St. Joseph's. What's the mascot? Was it a horse?
Yeah, because the cheerleaders are like the cowbells or something like that.
Yeah. But anyways, they show it's a Catholic school, and they show, well, so first of all, the legendary coach decides that he's going to have this be his last season. He's going to retire. And Kevin Bacon, who is hoping to become the next coach, decides to just get drunk on wine at this dinner. And they are showing this mission in Africa at some point during this dinner. And Kevin Bacon sees in the background some people playing basketball.
Yeah.
And you see this guy who's really tall and really skinny, just dunking all over the place.
Yeah.
And he gets this grand vision that he's going to go recruit this guy. So he talks the coach into sending him to Africa. And it was just, I was confused because I don't know. I guess recruiting visits to Africa maybe take longer than recruiting visits to Indiana.
Right.
But well, I was.
Okay, hold up.
I was like, is he spending 3 months here?
Right. We need to back up just a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
So he... This just confused me to no end. After the banquet, after he's noticed the guy in Africa dunking, and he's like, hey, this is the guy I got to go recruit. Foxy, the coach, hands him a plane ticket and says, sorry, bub, you're going to Boise or something. And he's like, oh, yeah, too bad. I guess I won't be going. Cut to him landing in Africa. Like, what the heck? That they didn't explain that at all. I guess they just assumed that. I
thought I missed something in that conversation because you're right. I remember him saying you're going to Boise. Yeah. And then all of a sudden seeing him in Africa, and I thought, okay, maybe I wasn't paying attention for a second.
No, they don't explain it. So I guess we're just sort of left to assume that Kevin Bacon defies orders, maybe, or he went to that trip and then later he went. Like, all they had to do was throw in one like line of dialogue where when he lands, he says, yeah, I'm not really supposed to be here. My boss thinks I'm in Boise or something like that.
Yeah. So he ends up in Africa and, you know, it is trope city. Of course, he gets on a bus that I knew when I saw the bus the first time, you knew that there was going to be a chicken on that bus.
Right.
Sure enough. There is a chicken on the bus, and he takes this bus to some small town and immediately runs into this guy. They called him, what was his name? I can't remember any of the names, but he was described as the fat guy, right. And he kind of runs the city.
Yeah. He's
with these copper mines.
This is, for a point of reference, this is like Sato in Karate Kid 2.
Yeah. He's the guy who knows everybody. He's the grifter of the city. And he thinks, what did he think he was there for? The copper mine. He thought he was there for the copper mine. And Kevin Bacon is like, oh, no. I'm here for basketball. Well, this fat guy just happens to be like the owner of the local basketball team, I guess. And so he takes him to this gym where these guys are really playing really good and like are big and strong. Yeah. And so the main guy that was also on the bus with Kevin Bacon, do you know who that was?
No.
That was, I think his name is Elo Matumbo.
Oh, really? Is he?
Brother of
Dick. Oh, really?
Not today.
And brother of Craig Elo, by the way.
Yes, half brother of Craig Elo. But anyways, Kevin Bacon is like, no, I'm not here for any of these awesome guys. I'm here for this guy and Wanabe. And they're all making fun of him because Wanabe is supposed to be this like backwards little village.
Yeah.
And so nobody's willing to take him to Wanabe. And he just decides to set out in the middle of Africa on foot, where these wild animals seem to be lurking in the near distance.
Well, and not to give too much away, he goes on this trek, and then later on, to prove himself, he scales a mountain wearing khaki shorts and Reebok pumps. Like, this was some amazing product placement for Reebok pumps. Like,
oh, I can't. Okay, I've got more to talk about that excursion later on.
Sorry to jump ahead.
It's okay. But so he by hook or by crook, he gets to Wanabe, and you know, his entrance into the village is, you know, all these, this village is basically run by a Catholic priest and his assistant, Sister Susan. Yeah. But as he's walking into this village, each one of these Africans who's dressed like, you know, they're ready to be on the warpath with spears and wooden shields are looking at him like they've never seen a white person before. Right.
Trope city.
But so he walks in to this village and realizes, okay, this is actually where I'm supposed to be. And he finds, Saleh, that's his name, this kid, Saleh. And
Saleh from Wanabe.
So, yes. Saleh immediately is like, you came all the way here to watch me play basketball? And he's like, yeah. And he proceeds to play a trick on Jimmy Dolan, acting like he can't even dribble or shoot.
Well, ironically, when he was pretending like he couldn't do that, I was still sort of thinking like, well, he's better than Kevin Bacon was in that opening scene.
Yes. But I only lead all of that up because this leads up to the first slow motion that is so epic. I mean, it's so amazing where Kevin Bacon is dejected because he thinks he's come all the way out here to find this kid who can't even dribble. Right. And he turns his head and Saleh, the recruit, is like, I've disappointed you and everything. And Kevin Bacon is walking away and Saleh takes the ball and proceeds to take off from the free throw line for this massive dunk.
Which is that a regulation free throw line? Because this court is basically painted on dirt outside someplace.
It's on dirt and the basketball pole is literally made out of like corn husks. I mean, what are we doing here?
Well, but yeah, that,
it's like leaning at a 45 degree angle.
So of course he can dunk on it. He's 6'8" and he can dunk on it. But yeah, like Kevin Bacon turns his head and he doesn't really see him dunk it. Like he's basically just seen 10 straight minutes of this guy fumbling around with a basketball looking like he's horrible. And then he kind of gets a half glimpse of this guy dunking. And then all of a sudden he's like, yes, yeah, you are the player I've been looking for. Like, hey, maybe dunk taking off from the free throw line is all he can do. He doesn't run through any other drills or.
Oh, is he even? He's ready to put him in the NBA Hall of Fame off of that one dunk.
I wanted to be like, hey, Jimmy Dolan, Coach Dolan, a 6'8" black guy who can dunk. That is not like the most novel thing ever.
I just couldn't believe the slow motion take there, though, with Kevin Bacon literally basically just going.
I know.
What? And
if you like, listen, you have to watch this. Like, it's so it is. It's like they're trying to dramatize this dunk, but there's nothing really there to dramatize. And so it's the kid could have jumped off of a chair or something. Like that's how little of the dunk you actually see because the focus is Kevin Bacon's head and that crazy haircut he has.
And you can't even hang on the rim because it'll tear the whole corn husk goal down.
Yeah, they will be screwed then because
the movie then really just becomes pretty generic where he's just trying to get this guy recruited. And the problem is that he's the son of the tribal chief. And there's a lot of problems with the tribe. The father doesn't want him to leave. And basically the plot at this point is that Jimmy Dolan, Kevin Bacon, is going to, you know, win the heart of the father by basically doing everything that the tribe does so that he can see that he's committed to this family and to this kid. And then you just proceed to just see Jimmy Dolan running with cattle and
drinking goat's milk,
eating strange things and drinking goat's milk. Yeah.
And
which
right after he drank the goat's milk and the village leader, whoever that was, said, oh, he's going to have problems. Cut to him wearing white pants for like the next six scenes. Like, uh-oh. He has diarrhea. Better watch out.
Yeah, I just kept thinking maybe they put something in that goat's milk because, I mean, well, they knew immediately he was going to have the Hershey squirts. And I was just like,
I mean, I am a cow's milk person myself, but I also know, I assume that if I went to Kroger, Trader Joe's, whatever, just I could get goat's milk if I really wanted to, because I know you can get goat cheese.
Yeah, you can get goat's milk. The only thing I could think of is either they put something in there or they just assumed that he was going to have a problem with it because he's an American and he's not used to drinking unpasteurized goat milk or something.
Well, I wish they would go back and do a new cut of this movie where right after he drinks the goat's milk and starts having trouble, they cut in a scene where Joaquin Phoenix comes in and scolds him for for stealing the milk that was meant for the baby calf.
Yes. Joaquin, very concerned about milk. So let's get into Sister Susan a little bit, because after he drinks the goat milk, for the next 10 minutes, the running joke is he has to run off and use the bathroom. And of course, we've already talked about the scene with him arguing with Sister Susan, you know, not holding his stomach, but basically holding his junk when he has to run to the woods. But they keep kind of like giving Sister Susan a minute or two on screen. And you think, okay, maybe there's going to be some sort of romance here, but they really don't ever allude to it completely, basically just because they don't give her a whole lot of screen time. They give her a line or two here and there.
Well, yeah, I was like, okay, are they going to fall in love? I mean, she's a nun. That's a whole nother complicated thing to get into. But you're right. They are setting it up as though there is a love interest between these two. And it does remind me of Hoosiers and Gene Hackman and Barbara Hershey. Like, that relationship could have existed in that movie without them falling in love, but they do. And we'll talk about that when we do Hoosiers. In the same way with this, I guess they wanted to have kind of a voice of reason who was an American who was kind of telling him, helping Kevin Bacon learn the lesson that it's not all about wins and losses in basketball, that there are deeper meanings and being part of this village and part of this tribe that you don't know anything about and you're here messing it up. I guess they wanted to have that voice, like that conscience in his head, maybe.
Well, she kind of played like a little bit of a flirty, I told you so, every time she would be on screen. It was always like Kevin Bacon would be like, see, I'm going to do this to win the dad over. And then she'd be like, you think you're going to do that? You're an idiot. Yeah.
It's classic like Sam and Diane. I can tell they don't like each other now, which is going to make it all the more better when they get together at the end of this movie. Like this movie's a trope avalanche, and that's just one of them. Except for the fact that she's a nun. All they had to do is like not make her a nun,
make her a volunteer.
She's there. Kevin Bacon's 32. She could have been in like the Peace Corps or something.
Yeah, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, but that led to their little argument. You only see him run off to actually have the squirts one time, and it's this part. And he's out. You don't know how far he's gone because they don't show him like walking 5 miles. But as he's doing his business, he's actually reaching for some leaves to clean himself. Yeah. And he hears something in the brush.
I'm remembering this scene now. It's so stupid.
And it's a warthog.
Yeah, of course.
And he starts running. Now, if I'm doing my business in the woods and I see an animal that could be potentially dangerous, the first thing I'm going to do is pull up my pants because I know I'm not going to get anywhere fast if I don't do that. Yeah. But he doesn't do that. And he proceeds to trip over his ankle length pants.
Well, he was a world-class athlete in college. He's an All-American.
Yes.
So of course, you know, it's going to be tough for him.
But somehow he's got his underwear on too. So I'm not exactly sure what happened in those moments.
There are different customs in different parts of the world when it comes to relieving yourself.
But he runs for like 2 miles to get away from this thing. And then just trips for no reason into this dust cloud, and he thinks that he's about to be ended by this warthog, and here comes Saleh's bodyguard with a spear and kills it just in the nick of time.
I know. Yes. Which did they use slow motion again to show that warthog getting killed? Or was they used?
I think they did. I think they used slow motion for both the fall and the warthog being killed.
Yeah. This movie was bereft of any sort of special effects other than slow motion. Like, it was just.
And they've made a point up until now to show us his 1952 polio brace several times. And I just kept thinking that knee is not going to keep up during this warthog chase, but apparently he does just fine. Maybe that's what caused him to flail at the end. They don't really get into it, but
yeah, I know this movie came out in 1994. They made knee braces that just pulled up around, you know, that were made of like spandex or something that just pulled up around your knee. They didn't like his has like screws and stuff in it.
No, it's like a torture apparatus from the Renaissance.
Yeah, but right after the spear guys, and maybe you're about to say this, right after this guy spears the warthog, he's like, "Oh man, you saved my life!" And he goes to shake his hand, but he still has the leaves that he was going to use to wipe himself. And this guy, this like African spearsman, looks down and like sniffs like. Like, okay, hilarious joke. His poop doesn't smell good. Hold for huge laugh.
Yeah. And they showed the leaves and like, you're just like, what am I watching? And
Kevin Bacon's like, oh, whoops. Hey, fish out of water. What am I going to do? Sorry.
I don't know how to wipe myself and get rid of the evidence.
I know. Well, and yeah, you mentioned the first thing you did was pull up your pants. The second thing you would do would be drop the leaves that you just used to wipe your arse with.
Drop your turdy leaves.
Gross. It's like, after this warthog chase is over, I'm going to still need to wipe, so I better hold on to these.
So after that, basically, Kevin Bacon is just trying to get in good with the tribe and really trying to recruit this guy to come. And he's basically saying, there's no way I can. But he's getting that. Kevin Bacon is definitely getting into that position of Dances with Wolves, where he's becoming part of the tribe, yeah. kind of thing, where they're opening up to him. They're telling him what the problem is with this guy in the city, fat guy who owns the other basketball team. And basically he wants to buy their land to mine copper, and Saleh's older brother tried to make a deal and was basically disowned by his father. And so now Saleh's older brother is working for the fat guy. And there's this animosity between the tribe and the fat guy. And there's a scene where Saleh's sister gets married and they're having a celebration and they're having a fire and all these dances. And Kevin Bacon is just, you know, he's kind of getting into it. He's playing with the kids, and the fat guy's henchmen come riding into town on motorcycles, yeah. and they start burning all the huts and everything.
Yeah. So this is another parallel to the Karate Kid. You know, we have a villain, Karate Kid, the bad guys, the Cobra Kai rides around on motorcycles. In Karate Kid 2, I believe Sato's henchmen come in and tear up the village that they live in that movie. So there's a lot of borrowing going on.
Definitely. Oh, and before the ceremony, before the celebration of the wedding, Kevin Bacon, so Saleh explains to him that basically, you know, their tribe depends on cattle. And so Kevin Bacon goes and sells like his video camera and his ticket home at this pawn shop and gets enough money to buy like 50 head of cattle for this tribe. And this leads to my favorite line in the whole movie. And I actually did laugh at this, but I don't think it was supposed to be funny. He comes back into the village with all of these cattle and he sees Sister Susan. Did you hear what he said to her?
Yes, your mom. I hope you play the clip right here too.
I will. But he says, "Moo, sister."
Moo, sister.
Right.
Like he's so proud of himself that he's brought all these cattle. He's like,
"Moo, sister."
And she just, of course, playfully.
The script is so bad. Well, and like as we're describing all these things, I'm like, they've tried to jam so much into this. Like,
yeah.
The wedding, him becoming part of the tribe. Oh, yes. There's another village that doesn't like them, and they're going to raid their village on motorcycles. Which, by the way, they tore or burned down everything during that raid. I did notice that they did not tear down the basketball goal. Like that was like the one thing they left standing.
You know, it was funny to me too, because these guys that came in, one of them was the star player for the other team, Dikembe Mutombo's brother.
Yeah.
Not today. And, you know, these are just guys from the city. These are not tribal guys. They're not, you know, these warriors, but they were all painted up. like they had the paint on the faces and stuff. And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
After all of this, Kevin Bacon is done. He's like, I'm not. Because Saleh is like, there's no way I can leave now. And Kevin Bacon is like, all right, I'm done. I'm leaving. So he goes back to this little city and is, I guess, in a bar that the fat guy owns or something.
Well, again, sorry to keep doing this. Karate Kid 2, they make a bet in a bar about chopping those ice blocks. And like, so like the bet happens again in a bar. And then also Karate Kid 1. They decide they're going to settle all their differences where at the karate tournament. And so same thing happens here.
Yeah. They decide to play this game. If when Abby wins, then they get to keep their land. If they lose, then the fat guy gets his land. And also, if they win, side bet, Kevin Bacon is going to get to go home with Saleh. And another great quote in that scene is, I guess it was Kevin Bacon saying it to maybe the other Dikembe's brother. I just wrote down the quote, but it was in that scene. He said something like, "Are you scared or something?" He goes, "Not on your best day, butthead." I just thought that was hilarious. What a dig.
Yeah.
I have one other quote, I think, for the actual game. But anyways, the last 30 minutes of this movie is preparing for the game and the game itself, which the only thing I'll say about the preparation for the game, there's one scene where Kevin Bacon is basically saying, hey, defense is more important than breathing. And he's trying to tell one of these players for Wanabe that he needs to learn how to play defense without fouling. And then they cut to these twins that are on the team who are laying down on their backs. And I'm like, Starsky, man, can you not have a better shot than this?
I know.
Because his shot is straight up their shorts.
Yeah. Well,
and they're not wearing like Chris Webber, Jalen Rose shorts. They're wearing John Stockton's. No.
Well, yeah, it is not surprising that Wanabe would be behind a little bit on the basketball fashion. Yeah. Also, just the irony of Kevin Bacon lecturing this player on he shouldn't foul when he's playing. When at the beginning of the movie, when Kevin Bacon plays one-on-one versus the recruit, he offensive fouls him like 7 different times. Like he's lowering his shoulder, driving the kid onto the ground. He's slapping his hand, clearly offensive fouling him.
Yeah. That's a kid who's 9 inches taller than him and 100 pounds heavier. Yeah. So, but anyways, he's training this team and one of their, I guess their point guard, he twists his ankle and he's going to be out for a month. Well, this game is in like 7 days. So the way to fix this is to have, because you can only be a member of the Wanabe tribe to play in this game, is to have Kevin Bacon join the tribe. And in order to join the tribe, you have to have 2 things done. You have to go on a soul-searching excursion with just a poem as directions as to where you're supposed to go. And then you're also supposed to basically get sliced in the belly with a knife.
Yeah, what is that about? Like, what is that for? Like, they don't explain that. It's just, okay, so basically you have to, Kevin Bacon gets his poem, and he is ill-prepared in terms of, like, food, water, or attire. Like, he's wearing his...
Hey, he's got his Reebok pumps on. That's all you need.
I guess, I'm assuming Reebok paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
But he's wearing Reebok pumps. And to my memory, he's wearing khaki shorts and a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And he climbs a mountain that is like the size of...
It's like Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, Mount Fuji or something. he's like up there, no problem. Like, did he free solo?
He is total... That's the exact note I had. He was definitely free soloing this thing.
Yeah, he did not bring any sort of climbing equipment, but he just basically tightens his shoes with the pump technology and runs up the side.
Yeah, and he gets up there and it's like he has this epiphany. I don't know what that epiphany is, but he's at the top of this mountain and he screams out some African word that, you know, indicates that he has found his soul, I guess.
Yeah.
He searched for his soul and he found it. So then he goes back to the village and they proceed to slice his belly.
Yeah. And they don't explain why. It's just you kind of have this, like, you kind of go, like, he watches this ceremony being performed earlier in the movie. And he seems intrigued, and the guy is just like having a seizure or something. And then it's almost like they're reaching down his pants to make the incision and they make it, but they don't tell you why or if they're like taking
it looks
something
like
out.
It definitely looks like he's going to be circumcised.
Oh,
and then like the first time, you know, with the Saleh's brother-in-law, future brother-in-law, it looks like they're pulling his shorts down to where they're going to circumcise the guy. But then they just proceed to like cut like where his ovaries would be.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what they were doing. They were going to insert some ovaries into this guy. It's part of the Wanabe tradition.
So one intentional joke there is Kevin Bacon is, this is the line, not too low, guys. And I just thought, yeah, that's not funny, Kevin.
No.
But then, so he's part of the Wanabe tribe and he gets to play in this game, which is in the city, but it's still on a dirt floor.
You know what it reminded me of? Have you ever seen that made for TV special when it was Gilligan's Island, when the Globetrotters played the robots? That's what it reminded me of.
Well, I felt like, okay, we have been in Africa for an hour. Okay, we know we're in Africa. Yeah. We have seen the spears. We have seen the makeup. We've seen the one street corner of this city that looks like they filmed in Tijuana. Yeah. We get it. We know we're in Africa, but they can't find a hard court. And they have beads like little African-American girls would wear in their hair hanging on the bottom of the basketball.
I know they do.
And I'm just like, okay, guys, we get it. We're in Africa. I don't think that we need to put beads on the nets.
Well, and yeah, so they drive the point home. Like, first off, they could have played the game at the, what was the other village's name? The one
they had a gym.
I know they had a legit indoor gym, but they decide they're going to play in Wanabe, and like Wanabe can't be that far from that gym. But like the scoreboard is made out of like wood paneling from a.
I thought that they were in the city. Were they not in the city? Because the brother was trying to get there, but he was stuck in traffic.
Well, yeah.
But was he trying to get to the village?
Well, this movie's so confusing, I'd kind of lost track of where they were.
Anyway.
Yeah, the court is primitive. It's like the 3-point line and the lane are, it's like when you see like a baseball diamond, when they chalk a baseball diamond. That's what the lane and 3-point line look like.
The Wanabe players actually have painted numbers on their bare skin.
Yeah, they play shirts versus skins. And Wanabe, they have like this like Waylon Jennings looking W that goes over their chest and shoulders.
Well, and then just to drive the point just a little bit more that we're in Africa, half of the spectators are the Africans who jump up and down constantly.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing.
And I just thought, man, you know, I know that these scenes and these takes don't just last for the 30 seconds that you see them in. And these guys are literally jumping through the whole basketball game.
Yeah.
And I know that those guys were probably jumping up and down for like 3 days straight. And I just felt like these guys have earned whatever extra money they have made.
Well, and also my wife works with people who are from parts of Africa. I would love to show them this movie and just be like, what is your take? Cause they are trying to drive home so much that they're in Africa. Whereas if a movie was taking place in the United States, if this movie took place in the United States and they were still trying to drive that point home as much as they were in this, it would be like people coming up every 5 seconds, like, hey, want a hamburger, hot dog, yes. USA, USA. Let's shoot some fireworks.
I like to shoot my guns.
Yeah.
Well, then they start playing this game, and where Saleh was the only player who could actually play before. All of a sudden, you've got Pistol Pete out there playing point guard. delivering behind the back Magic Johnson style passes to Saleh, who's dunking it. Now they're down like 15 points at halftime, but there's, you know, the points that they have are Harlem Globetrotter-esque style dunks and plays.
Let me ask you this. Who's worse at basketball, Jimmy Dolan or Scott Howard from Teen Wolf? I think they're both.
Well, I will say that I think that Kevin Bacon is athletic enough. Like you said, he's probably a very fine dancer. And I think that allowed him to at least be able to dribble the ball and run at the same time. Yeah. Michael J. Fox.
They did not rely on stock footage like Teen Wolf did.
Yeah.
But anyway, so.
Although I was looking very closely at any time Kevin Bacon's character was doing something especially athletic, it was definitely stand in, you know, from behind. Yeah. And not Kevin Bacon.
Right.
They were very careful not to show his face.
Yeah. Maybe that's why his hair was that way. Like it had to match the stunt person's wig. Was the entire team given Reebok pumps like right before the game or maybe right at halftime or something?
Were they wearing Reeboks? Because I think that Saleh was still wearing Sperry's, wasn't he?
Well, I'm looking at a photo from the game, but they like
one guy was wearing like little girls like buckle shoes.
Okay, so I do think they do get the new shoes halfway through the game because I'm looking at photos.
That's right, at halftime they get the new shoes.
Again,
that's right,
folks. This is an example of how ridiculous this movie is. Like we just watched this last night and we have no idea because they just kind of go from thing to thing. And so I'm looking at a picture from the first half here, and yes, he's wearing like boots and the opponent's wearing pumps. And then, I think when Foxy, by the way, Coach Fox shows up randomly in the middle of this game, I think he brings everybody Reebok pumps. And because Kevin Bacon's like, all right, we all got new shoes. We're ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Kevin Bacon, he decides to take a shot in the second half, and Dikembe Mutombo's brother, like, tackles him like he's a fullback and tears up his knee to where he can't play anymore.
Well, this was another thing where they used slow motion, I believe. Like,
yes.
Because he basically, Kevin Bacon is getting ready to shoot a three-pointer and he makes it, by the way. But unfortunately, Dikembe Mutombo's brother dives head first at the knee like he was Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Kevin Bacon's done. He's out. But lo and behold, Saleh's older brother, who had been disowned by his father, shows up.
Hold up a second.
Oh, okay.
We're leaving out. I don't know if this was a crucial part of the movie, but they put in the girl to play point guard.
Yes. Saleh's sister. Yeah,
because they had made a joke about, our women could beat you or something. And they put her in. So they put her in. This is like, so I think they put her in before they put Kevin Bacon in, if memory serves. Again, this movie's a total blur. And so she's playing point guard and she's bringing the ball up the floor. And of course, the guy on the other team's taunting her, but he's also palming her butt cheek the entire time. Did you see that?
He is not just like tapping it or anything like that. He is literally palming
like
her right butt cheek.
Like, okay, when he kind of shoved her, I sort of got what the movie was trying to do there with like, oh, hey, I'm a guy, I'm tougher than you. But like palming a female's butt the entire trip up the floor in a PG-13 movie, it's like showing like it's like sexually assaulting her.
She kind of sloughs that off.
The refs certainly slough it off. Like they don't call anything.
But then the next time down the court, he just straight up cops a field.
Yeah.
And that's when she's like, all right, I've had enough.
Well, and of course the refs don't call anything, which at that point, is this game even legitimate if they're not going to call that?
Exactly. Well, that leads me to, so Kevin Bacon is out of the game and he's basically the coach now. And there's one egregious foul that the refs miss, and Kevin Bacon blurts out, "What are you, blind? Get a dog." And I thought, what is that? Who says that at a ref?
Oh gosh. I mean, this was an actual movie that was in theaters, everybody. Like this was released for real.
My wife, she saw the very beginning of it and she saw Kevin Bacon and she goes, was this movie a big deal? And I said, no. Nah.
Well, I mean, it was a big deal in that I remember it being released. I did not see it at the theater. Oh, it's rated PG. Good grief.
Yeah, that's crazy. The brother comes in. He decides to play for Wanabe. You know, he's welcomed back in to the good graces of his father and proceeds to be the best player on the court.
I know. He's still wearing like khaki pants while he's doing it too.
Yes, and loafers. Yeah. But there was a funny scene where, so the Wanabe team has a fatter guy on the team, and he has, what was the fat kid's name on Teen Wolf? What was his name?
Chubb.
Yeah. He has a Chubb moment where he's
That's right.
With the ball in his hand and nobody guarding him.
Right.
And he proceeds to take like a 20-foot shot, which clearly was missing the first shot from the long shot. Clearly missed. But then they cut to closer to the goal, bounces around a couple of times and goes in. So that happened. But eventually it gets to the very end of the game and Saleh basically mimics Jimmy Dolan's go-to move. There's like 15 seconds left on the clock, and I swear this play takes 30 seconds.
Well, they said, okay, now correct me if I'm wrong. We may have to go back and listen to the actual tape, but they come out of a timeout, and they say that there's 41 seconds left.
Okay.
Now, I'm assuming that this is 1994.
They're down by one.
Yeah, this is 1994, and so we had still had a 45-second shot clock then, I believe, in college. But yes, this overly elaborate move takes forever to execute.
Yeah. But in the end, he nutmegs him
he nutmegs him, but it takes forever. And to me, he's really running a risk by going for like the double windmill on the dunk.
Just go straight up. Just
go dunk it. Like they're not going to be able.
There's a lot on the line and you're going for the human highlight film kind of dunk.
I know. Like first off.
But he gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, first off, like, if you are as athletic as you are made out to be in this movie, you could probably just drive right around this guy. You probably didn't have to nutmeg him. You probably could have just driven to the rack and maybe even gotten an and one. But yeah, he does it in the most dramatic fashion possible.
But he does. He scores the dunk, and literally like a half a second later, the time is expired. Somebody shoots a gun, of course.
No, because it's primitive. They're not in the United States. It's primitive.
And everybody's happy except for the fat guy and his team. And there's only a couple of things left that I want to mention as far as what happens in the movie. Well, they're all celebrating, and there's a moment where one of the players on the Wanabe team, you know, the Wanabe team, again, their shirt or their skins, they're not wearing any kind of uniform.
Except for war paint.
Yes, war paint. And one of the other players comes and kisses the fat guy on Wanabe's team right in the belly button.
Yeah.
And it is sweaty and it is fat. Yeah. And I was thinking, okay, why? I got to ask Sean this question. How much money would it take for you to kiss a fat guy's sweaty belly?
Well, I mean, I can think of way grosser things, to be honest with you. I mean,
really, that's pretty disgusting to me.
It is disgusting.
I mean, well, I could throw out a couple of names that we both know. Yeah,
listen, your point is made, is it would take a decent amount of money for me to do it. I wouldn't do it voluntarily just to celebrate something.
I'm telling you right now, if Starsky came to me and said, okay, we've just won, you're going to plant one right on this guy's belly button. Do it. I'm going to say, Starsky, you're out of your mind.
Well, okay. I will grant you, it's absolutely disgusting. In addition to being disgusting, it makes no sense whatsoever in the movie. It's just like, it's a random thing that...
Yeah,
it's not a callback to anything else. It's weird.
No. It's just how he celebrates.
Well, and this—I don't know. This may be the other thing that you're going to bring up, but I guess this movie felt like there needed to be some sort of quasi love interest for Kevin Bacon.
Oh yeah.
And so the nun comes running out, a la Karate Kid, a la Teen Wolf, and she kisses Kevin Bacon, and of course it's he's able to get off his once again hilarious line, "You're allowed to do that?" And
only when I mean it.
Yeah, only when I mean it. And so I like, are they in love? Are they going to start dating now? Is she going to renounce her nunhood?
Yeah, who knows? It doesn't, you know. So the end of the movie is he's become the head coach of the St. Joseph's University, and Saleh is, you know, the starting power forward or whatever. And they do the whole introduction and to the team for, I guess, their first game of the season or whatever. And the best part of the whole movie is the freeze frame at the end.
I know. If you said, okay, what is the most tropey, generic way to end this movie? If you'd asked me before I'd even watched it, I'd say, well, I'd probably say freeze frame on a high five, maybe. That's exactly how they end this thing.
With Saleh 6'8", full extension, and Kevin Bacon hair flying, trying to get up to Saleh's hand, they don't even freeze frame at the slap. They freeze frame like before the slap. So Kevin Bacon is in full volleyball spike mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. That's pretty much it. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
This movie, we've been talking about how stupid it is, how it didn't make any sense. And your wife said, Alicia said, you know, was this a big deal? And like, no, it wasn't. But it did make $4 million. The budget was $17 million and it made $21 million. So
really,
somehow this made somebody $4 million.
So this came out in 1994. I don't know exactly when it came out, but that would have been the year that I graduated high school. And I could see myself and my friends being excited about this movie because we were such basketball geeks,
yeah,
that we might have gone to go see it. Or if it had come out like the first semester of my freshman year in college, which
it came out,
you were came there out, also.
It came out opening weekend, came out in January of 94.
Okay, so it was the very beginning. But like, I could also see, like, if I was in college, like me and some of my good friends thinking this would be a fun movie to go see, yeah, and being horribly disappointed. But, so let's rate this one. And I'm going to go with the over the top set piece of the nets with beads on the bottom of it, because I just thought, what a ridiculous thing. But yeah, so given that, how many out of five, how many net beads would you give this?
I give it a half of a net bead. This movie's horrible. It's so horrible. No, it's one of the reasons I enjoyed watching it, but it's still horrible.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a half too, because I did laugh, but it was at parts that weren't supposed to be funny. But I didn't even laugh like multiple times throughout the movie. I laughed at the fart, the fart noise.
How did I miss that?
Oh man, a fart noise will always get me. But I did laugh. Like, there were like four or five guys who would always be shown from the tribe, from the Wanabi tribe, who were like the elders or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there was like one that was really old, and every time they showed him, he would be laying down and like trying to take a nap. And I thought that was kind of funny. So that's worth half of a net bead for me. The rest of the movie was horrible. If it was a comedy, it did not show itself to be a comedy. Yeah. It wasn't inspirational. It was terrible. It was really bad.
So this is just another, there were three movies that were released on January 7th, 1994. The Air Up There was one of them. And I will say,
can I guess?
Yeah.
Can I guess?
I will say this,
or at least one.
The Air Up There was the highest grossing movie
really
that was released that weekend.
Never mind. Because I was going to guess, because I know my senior year, Ace Ventura came out, mm-hmm, and that was like a movie that we were incredibly excited to see. Yeah. But I know that it would have done well.
Yeah. No. So it was The Air Up There, American Cyborg, Steel Warrior. Never even heard of that. What? And then the other one was one that it's not a good movie, but I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for it. Cabin Boy.
Oh yeah, that's a great one.
With Chris Elliott, and David Letterman's in that movie.
Yeah. No, that is a great one. It's sad that Cabin Boy did not do as well as The Air Up There, because it's much better, right, in my humble opinion. Okay, well, so that just leaves us with one more thing to do, and that is pick our next movie. This has kind of become my favorite part of the
It's so exciting. We don't know. Episode. We don't know.
I know. So keeping on with the theme, you know, we have 197 movies in our queue. Is there one that you are excited to watch?
Man. There's so many. Fish That Saved Pittsburgh is one that I'm kind of excited about. Yeah, I don't know. I'll say that
one. I'm trying to think of one that I haven't really ever seen before. Okay, I got one that I've never seen before that I'm excited to see. It's got Burt Reynolds in it, which means it's going to be classic.
Yeah.
Stroker Ace. Can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are going to do the random number generator, 1 through 197. The number is 163. Oh, referenced earlier in the podcast. Cool Runnings.
All right.
Very close to Stroker Ace, but not quite there.
Yeah. Oh, man, this one's good.
Yeah. I haven't seen this movie since, you know, it came out, so I'm excited to watch it.
One of John Candy's last movies.
Yeah, I remember it also being very inspirational, but unlike The Air Up There, very funny as well.
Yeah, John Candy's in it, so it's halfway home there.
Maybe we can also discuss our favorite John Candy films during this movie.
Yes.
When we're reviewing it. But that's it. So thank you again for listening to Slow Pitch, where all of our knee braces are from the 21st century.
Heck yeah.
All right. See you next time.
See ya.
I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball.